the podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. Ned, he ran so far it'd make you sigh. Ned, he knew that he just wouldn't die. Ned went out and Boston qualified.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Gary Catterin. You remember, the guy who got a piece of horse heart stitched into his foot. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run podcast, come visit me on my blog called The Second Lap, which you can find at thesecondlap.blogspot.com. But I can't imagine why you'd need to go there, because it's also on Chris's very own Run Run Live website. No, wait, that's not right. It's really on Chris's site first, and it's also on Blogspot second. After all, it was Chris's fault to begin with. He's the one who talked me into writing it. Funny, he's good at getting people to do stuff like that. Anyway, while you're there, you'll find stories of my latest running adventures, mixed with a few stories from days gone by. And you'll even find the famous foot surgery pictures that you heard about back in episode 81. Yum yum, if you're into that. So, wherever you are and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
So the wind is probably going to be a little crazy here. Looks like there's a storm whipping up. I'm out walking my friend Buddy the Wonder Dog, because he's been chafing at the bit all day. It's been really hot out, and I don't like to take him out and exercise him in the heat, because he's very hairy. And you can hear that I have a cold. But did you see the article that they listed the 10 smartest dogs in the world, and Buddy was number one on the list? So, yeah, it looks like a storm's whipping up. Got some gray clouds. This happens in the afternoons on these hot summer days. Sorry about the wind. Turning all the leaves over so you can see the silver side of the leaves, and these big old thunderstorms will come rushing through. And you could be, you know, they're very isolated. They're only a mile across, so you get the thunderstorm in one town and not in another. I wanted to go for a bike ride, but I just felt so horrible the last couple of days that I really thought I should just not do that. Sorry. So, I got my brand new Glycerin 7s on. These are cool shoes. We got them from Brooks Running, because they're sponsoring our Twitter Ragnar Ultra team. So, I'm going to take them for a little walk. That's what you're supposed to do, by the way, with new shoes. You're supposed to put them on and walk around in them. This will be interesting, because I haven't done a lot of road miles recently. I've done mostly trails, so we're going to have to see what happens with that. Oh, this dog. This dog is crazy. All right. Bye.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, Brad.
How you doing?
Good. So I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm looking at the 20 to 30 medals that I have hung here rather haphazardly from a bit of a hook here. And it's not very nice or classy, this display I have. And I understand that you've come up with a solution for this problem. For people like me, and maybe some people who are dreaming of having a lot of medals and want to display them. So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, like you and probably everybody else, I worked hard to get my first marathon medal, and we got it home and thought, all right, what am I going to do with it? I work at a steel fabrication facility. We make custom fixtures for big companies, and I had access to make pretty much whatever I wanted out of metal. And we have a laser, cuts a half-inch steel, so whatever I could draw, I could cut. Well, playing around, I made myself a pretty archaic-looking running metal hanger, and that was the beginning.
So basically what we have here is a hanger built out of metal, and it got various phrases or pictures, whatever basically you want. You can do custom stuff that you cut out of a piece of metal, and you hang your medals on that, right?
Exactly, yep. Some of them are slogans, say marathon, runner. I've done some really cool custom work for some special people, you know, with a little cancer ribbon on it or a little Superman logo or, you know.
So I remember working in the
working in manufacturing, and this would be the guys who always cut out the naked lady profile for the back of their pickup truck. Same sort of thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
A little bit more class.
What do you do with all that scrap metal? Well, you make marathon metal hangers out of it. So where can people find this and see what we're talking about?
Fellow marathon maniac friend of mine, Paul Gentry, has a website called 26.2metals.com.
Now, how is that spelled out?
It's 26.
Then the number's 26?
Correct. And then POINT, and then the number 2, and then spelled out MEDALS.com. Yep. And down the bottom right-hand corner, he's got a little icon. There's actually quite a few other little things. There's another marathon display for picture framing in there. And yeah, so there's a little web page that gives you the information you need to get a hold of me.
Cool. And what I understand that you've come into some unique challenges with this, and some people that maybe have too many medals for this. What are we going to do? We're going to fabricate some sort of, you know, cabinet for these guys?
Well, like Paul Gentry mentioned, he's a marathon maniac, so he came up with an idea of maybe doing one that says marathon and one that says maniac, so that'd be, it'd hold a lot more. I've tried to make a two-tiered one, you know.
So some people just have too many medals. Hopefully we'll all get to that point, right?
Yeah, we could come up with a sentence, you know, different, you know, marathon maniac runner.
Yeah, you could do something inspirational, like, you know, courage or something like that, right? You could really customize it to your environment. All right, so I'm on that page now. I see it. It's 26.2metals.com/medals, the METALS.html, and that's I see the pictures of it. So what is this, stainless, or is this
It's 11 gauge stainless steel, nice and thick, doesn't bend. I've made different iterations of it to where now it works really well. The first one, you know, posted up on some of the running forums, and I got some feedback, and some people helped me come up with some little better designs. And yeah,
all right.
I couldn't find anything else out there that was of good quality, looked nice. So for the money, this is probably the best thing you could probably find besides handcrafting it yourself.
Ah, that looks cool. All right. Well, I'll let you go. And thanks for the input. I like when people come up with ideas.
Thanks for the shout out. And
all right, man.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Badges. We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
And now for our featured interview.
All right, Don, we're back.
All right.
And with me this evening is Don. And Don has some really cool adventures. He calls himself Adventure Dude and other sort of things, tongue-in-cheek anyhow. And I'll just read off your website some of the things you've notched up here, which is, as of August 2009, you've done 180 marathons or longer races.
Yeah, well, it was 181 last weekend.
All right, so 177 marathons in 50 states plus D.C.?
Uh-huh.
36 plus D.C. second time around, 20 countries and
yep.
One ocean, 7 continents, 3 times, 2 planets, which you'll have to tell me more about that, 3 ultras, and 77 consecutive calendar months of running at least one marathon. So that's,
there you go.
That sounds a wee bit compulsive, but I bet you've had some fun doing it, huh?
Well, everything I do is fun. That's one of my rules. If you look at my website, you'll see there's a rule list. You know, the main rule is everything I do is fun. And the other names you were talking about, my friends usually refer to me as Marathon Don because I think it's a well-deserved reputation. I'm at 181 now. I did one last weekend out in Roswell, New Mexico at midnight. Area 51 in Nevada at midnight and ran 26 miles through the desert in the dark. And with a stiff headwind and an uphill course for the most of the way and a little bit of elevation, so that was a little bit of a new experience for me.
And aliens, too, right?
Well, yeah, you know, I didn't see any aliens, but I'm pretty sure they were out there somewhere.
How was the temperature? Did it come down at all?
It was cold. I was surprised. You know, it was supposed to get down, I thought, you know, somewhere in the 80s or something. But the truth is, it was cold. We had a really stiff headwind for the first 16 miles or so, and then it finally died down. And we were fighting that. pretty good, you know, with the uphill climb for most of it. So, you know, it was a little bit different than I started. The truth of the matter is I think the concept of running a marathon at Area 51 at midnight is cooler than the actuality. But nonetheless, it was a fun little adventure, and we had a good time. My fiance went out there with me, and we both run marathons quite frequently. And
this answers one of my other questions, because like I was telling you, I said, you know, I look at your website, and I can imagine your normal individual who doesn't run or maybe doesn't run as much, they would look at your website and go, why do you do this, Don? But I know why. My question was how, you know, because doing this many marathons, you must have a partner who does it with you, or, you know, it's got to take a huge chunk out of your life to do all this stuff. How do you do it?
Well, it does take a huge chunk out of my life. I had my first wife was pretty tolerant, but we kind of went off in different directions. But she did at least not stand in my way of doing crazy stuff. My fiance now is a marathon runner, and we actually met through running, and she ran her fourth marathon with me. And back in 2003, and she's at about 55 right now, marathons. So I'm pretty proud of her, but she's kind of, you know, it's all who you hang out with, and she's hanging out with the wrong guy if she wants to sit still. So it's working out really well. So, I have a pretty tolerant woman that I'm with, and she's got a 9-year-old daughter that's actually turning into quite a runner as well. So we take her along on adventures here and there, and she figures out how to be a part of it as well, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you have a non-running spouse, you drag them to more than 2-3 marathons, they just lose interest pretty fast because it's a lot of standing around being bored.
That's what my son always said. You think it's long running a marathon, you should try waiting for yourself sometime. And he'd harass me about that a lot. So I have been lucky to have a pretty good tolerant life, and also my business life has been good too, because I've been self-employed doing computer work for, you know, about 20 some years now. And then now I picked up I started the Grand Rapids Marathon. This is year 6 we're going into, and so I'm not answering to anybody's standard 40-hour work week, and that's the other thing that allows me to live the kind of life I want. And truth is, I work a lot more than 40 hours a week, but I enjoy most of it, and the other stuff I don't enjoy till maybe a couple weeks later, but usually when I look back on it, it was all right.
Yeah, understood. And if you had asked me the question, how could you do this, those probably would have been the answers I come up with: a tolerant partner and self-employment.
Yep.
So that's great that you were able to do that. So how do you manage to stay injury free with all these miles? And what kind of training?
I've been pretty lucky. You know, I only run, and for a guy that runs as many marathons as I am, I'm pretty much of a sleazeball. I run maybe 35 miles a week. I try to average. And in fact, I haven't totally stayed injury free. Last year, I had I kind of twisted an ankle around the end of January, or a knee around the end of January, and ended up tearing my meniscus.
Ooh.
And so I ended up in, by the time I limped through the winter and on into spring, and I thought I was getting better, and then after my May marathon, it screwed me up again, and I went and actually had arthroscopic surgery in July. After which I ran a marathon 17 days later because I had a streak going. I didn't want to mess it up. And I ran a few pretty slow marathons toward the end of last year, but I kept my streak alive, and I'm at 78 months as of last Sunday night. But, I'm not totally injury-free. I ended up having my other knee cleaned out a little bit at the end of last year just because I'd already met my deductible. I figured I might as well. And
So you, like, twisted something, huh? Because typically the meniscus isn't going to tear unless you do some lateral movement on it.
Well, we were running on, the snowy Michigan stuff, you know, streets that have been, you know, snowed on, driven on, refrozen. Then we're out doing a long run on a Saturday morning, and I think I just, you know, torqued something the wrong way. So I don't know exactly what happened, and in fact, it was a non-event. I didn't even know something happened until I was trying to run, like, the next day. And I said, you know, something's not right here, and so I... But that's really been my only injury, and it didn't really slow me down too much.
So you just basically run 3-4 times a week and then do a marathon on the odd weekend?
Well, yeah, I run during the week a few short runs, and then on the weekend I try to get in double digits at least once, and usually both days. Then, of course, I work a marathon in once a month at least. Some months it's more. I mean, I ran 3 in June. I had only planned on 2, but they were both the same weekend. And then my best friend emailed me and said, "Hey, what do you think about running Rio on the 28th?" And I said, "Okay." So
can't pass that up.
Well, didn't want to pass it up, but we ended up getting to the airport, and both of us being the seasoned travelers that we were, you know, traveling all over the world together and separately, didn't realize you need a visa to go to Rio. So we didn't go to Rio. So we're going to go to Costa Rica in September to make up for that and use our tickets. We went ahead and ran one up in Charlevoix, Michigan, and then we went up and climbed the state high point of Michigan the next day and the state high point of Minnesota the day after that. Hooked up with a microbrewery up in Duluth on the way home. So it was a good weekend nonetheless.
So financially, this must take some outlay unless you're so famous now, Don, that the races say, hey, we'll comp you an entry.
Well, the comp and the entry is usually not too much of a problem because I have a policy here in Grand Rapids that, I know how much it takes to put on a race, and race directors want to come here and run. All they got to do is ask me.
Right.
You know, the travel is a little more expensive, but the truth is you can get to anywhere in the United States for a weekend for, someplace between $500 and $1,000. And, if you're driving to Indiana or something, it's even easier than that. So it's not a tremendous outlay, and I don't live a real complicated lifestyle. I mean, I don't drive fancy sports cars or anything like that. I pretty much have basic transportation and live in a basic house. It's not a, a mansion or anything like that. I'd rather have experiences than to have stuff. And,
no mistress or drug habit?
No. I tried the mistress thing once a few years back, and that didn't work out too well. So, I...
if you hear some outside noises, I'm walking my border collie now. I'm outside.
Outside
noises. It's me and Buddy the Wonder Dog, my running partner.
All right. But no, it's been pretty good so far, and I haven't developed any habits that are real expensive anyway.
Yeah, so this is cool. You're keeping your health up and everything too. So tell me what's your best story? What's your best story with all this?
Probably one of the best things I ever did was a couple of years ago. I decided, actually it was before that, it was toward the middle of beginning of 2006 actually, and I was sitting in a bagel shop one day reading the Guinness Book of World Records that was sitting there. Found out that the world record for running marathons on all seven continents was 99 days, and I started thinking about it. And I was already signed up to go run Antarctica again in 2007. And yeah. I started kind of dinking around with the race schedules and searching online and looking for places to go run. I put together a plan to run it in 35 days. And that was a pretty exciting thing. I started thinking, okay, I can break the world record by, a lot. In fact, maybe even put it out of reach. So I set out to do that. I went to Birmingham, Alabama. Ended up running a really, really hilly course. It was a little colder than I had planned on being in. I thought going to Alabama in the middle of winter would be warmer than it was here, and it was pretty chilly that day, and we had this tremendous three-mile-long uphill kind of late in the race, which kept me pretty worn out by the time I got done. That was easy, the easy one for travel. It was in the same time zone as me or only an hour off or something. And wasn't too bad, and everybody there pretty much spoke English because it was in Alabama after all. And so then the next Friday was a marathon in Luxor, Egypt. So I then started doing this stuff. I left on Wednesday. I flew overnight, actually Tuesday night, flew overnight to the Netherlands, spent the whole day being a tourist in Amsterdam, and then flew overnight the next night to Luxor, got there on Thursday morning. So on Friday that week I ran a marathon in Luxor, Egypt, around some old stone ruins. And Luxor's got some pretty neat temples and stuff and some old ruins and things. It was great scenery, and plus it's a lot of rural farming. People were out there doing harvesting onions while we were doing it. We had to run around the same 10K course four times before we went back to the finish line, and every time you'd run around, there'd be a pile of onions that was getting a lot bigger every time. And the kids would be out there, and they'd run with you for a little while and introduce themselves, and they just wanted to hang out with you. And, we got to play with the kids a little as we were going along, and we had a good time there. Then I, went to a party that night. They threw a big dance for us. And the next morning, I flew from there to Valencia in Spain.
Yep.
And my third marathon was on Sunday. So I got to Valencia just about in time to pick up my packet, my race packet, then got up early the next morning and took a taxi to the race site and ran my third marathon in 8 days. Then I had, before I started this whole thing, I had called my dad and wanted to say bye to Mom and Dad, all that stuff. And my dad's giving me a little bit of a hassle, and he says, do you really think you can run seven marathons in that amount of time? And And, you know, he kind of ticked me off, you know, because, you know, dad, damn it, you know, I can pretty much do anything I want to, just stand back and watch. But he kind of got me going a little bit. And so, you know, I went off on this trip, and I got the first three in, and I was feeling pretty good about myself. And got on the airplane and took off to join the Antarctica Marathon Tour, which I met in Buenos Aires. And we spent a couple days in Buenos Aires goofing around before we went down to Ushuaia, Argentina. And Ushuaia is the southernmost city in the world. So we, you know, hung out there for, well, a good part of a day before we got on a ship. And then we took a ship on a two-day trip across the Drake Passage to Antarctica, to the Antarctic Peninsula. The Drake Passage is one of the, you know, renowned as part of the roughest waters in the world. And so we did a lot of rolling. You know, you'd go out after lunch and kind of, I walked out for some fresh air and I happened to walk out the wrong door and caught a whiff of diesel fume, and the next thing I'm doing is feeding my lunch the fish. It's just one of those things, you know. So, you know, I'm fighting, you know, fatigue and jet lag and seasickness and all this kind of stuff. And as soon as we got across the Drake Passage, the very next morning, early in the morning, was when the marathon was.
Yep.
We were on King George Island, and we looked out toward King George Island. You could barely see it because it was snowing sideways. We had to take these rubber Zodiac boats across from the ship off to land on King George Island. We got there, and we kind of got under. They have their buildings up on some research stations there, and the buildings are up on legs, up on pedestals. And so we got under the buildings and kind of dropped our bags and our dry clothes and all that kind of stuff, and we set out across the mud. It started out being a muddy, not too muddy on the first trip out, but it was an out-and-back course, and then we came back to the beginning when we went out the other way, and back to the beginning for a half marathon. By the time we got through the mud four times, it was getting pretty beat up with the feet of 200 people.
Sure.
And so anyway, but, you know, you start out on the course, and you're going through the mud, and then you're going through these little rolling rock fields and so on, and any roads that are on that island are pretty much just two tracks, and it's only if you have a pretty substantial four-wheel drive vehicle. So we ran back and forth between this, and then we got to the base of a glacier. And so we had to run uphill on a glacier a half a mile and then back down.
Right.
And then we got, you know, back through the rock fields and, you know, up and over, and you know, we'd see a couple little penguins here and there.
So it must have ran a lot longer than a marathon. You know?
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, that one, I was running, you know, 4.5 hours roughly on my marathons. Well, this one took, I think, real close to 6 hours.
Yeah.
So,
more,
it was tough.
Yeah, more like a trail race.
Yeah, it was definitely a trail race because there's no roads there. But, you know, we had a real good time there. I finished that one up. Then we spent, you know, the next week, and I really would recommend this trip from Marathon Tours, which is right out by you out there in Boston.
Yeah.
They do some great trips, and they've been putting this on since 95.
You got U.S., you got Egypt, which is Africa, right? You got Valencia, which is Europe. You got Antarctica. So
yeah.
What do you got left?
Well, I got South America, and the cool thing about South America is Ushuaia, Argentina had a marathon at that time, and it was scheduled for the Sunday, but the ship wasn't arriving till Monday. Well, with a whole ship, two ships full of marathon runners, they decided to reschedule, so we'd run it on Tuesday, so we'd get to run South America as soon as we got off the boat.
Awesome. It's on the way.
So, yeah, so it's right on the way, and most of us that did the Antarctica trip also stayed around and ran the marathon there in Ushuaia, Argentina on that Tuesday.
Okay.
So, well, that was real nice, except for when, in the course of being on the ship for that week after the marathon, I had picked up some, I don't know, something, bad cold or something, and I was feeling like crap, and I decided I was going to start taking the antibiotics I took with me just to fight whatever it was. But, geez, I got out there, and I was having a hard time breathing, and I pretty much just fought my way through that one.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went out there and got through it, and we got up, to 25K or so. And we took a right-hand turn along the bay there, right by the airport, and it's a 5K out and back. And the wind coming off that bay was so strong that it was blowing the water out of the cups when you picked it up from an aid station, so it's hard to even get a drink of water.
Yeah.
We were just, I mean, people were there. You go pick up your legs, and if you run into the side, you end up kicking yourself on the way through because the wind is actually affecting your leg movement as you're going.
Right,
so.
Right. You got to sort of lean into it and turn your body.
Yeah, and so it was really a tough marathon, but, you know, I got through that one, and I was feeling okay, and you know, when I got all done and a little bit tired out, the next morning, which was Wednesday, I took off for Australia.
Australia. All right.
Yeah, next one's Australia. And this marathon was probably the most satisfying marathon of my life. It's called the 6-foot track marathon. It's billed as Australia's toughest challenge. And it is, they have a strict 7-hour time limit.
And
it's 45 kilometers long. It's in Australia. It's on a 6-foot track.
Well, I know that part, but is it like Sydney or Queensland?
From Sydney, you go west about 3 hours.
All right, so into the Blue Hills.
Yeah, and so we went from Katoomba to Gentleman Caves is where we went on a 6-foot track.
Yep, got it.
Well, this one, you know, we stopped, and I had a couple friends meet me there. They wanted to run the last two marathons with me, and I said, hey, you know, it'll be fun. We can hang out. We can do some mountain climbing. We can do whatever we want to do and catch a couple marathons. So
yeah, well, both of us, Don, I know you're a big beer drinker, so you must have loved Sydney.
Well, you know, I am a beer drinker. I wouldn't say a big beer drinker. I like beer. I drink often, but not a lot. I'm not a big drinker, but I'm a consistent one. So, because I want to be able to keep doing it my whole life, so I don't ever abuse it. So, but yeah, Sydney and you know, all of Australia. I mean, Aussies are a great bunch of beer drinkers. That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, my buddies met me at the airport, and it's, you know, Friday morning early. Well, two of us had come in that day, and the other guy had come in earlier, like the day before. But we were both pretty well jet-lagged because we'd both flown overnight, and we totally missed Thursday due to the international dateline. So but by the time we got there, we were in pretty bad shape, and we went and picked up our race packet. And the race director, you never forget this guy because he's looking at us, and, you know, we're picking up our race stuff, and we're talking a little bit and getting acquainted. But he just looks at us, and, you know, before we walked out, he says, well, good luck, guys. And he just had this thing in his voice that said, there's no freaking way you guys are going to do this. We went out, we got our room, we, you know, took the shuttle out to the start. And this is the toughest marathon. They said, if you ever run a marathon in 4 hours, don't sign up for this one. Because,
yeah.
And there's a 7-hour time limit. So that's how tough they think it is.
Yeah.
And they were pretty much right. But it starts out, you know, and they started this out in waves because it's a pretty narrow track. It's 6 foot wide. That's why they call it the 6-foot track. It's 45 kilometers long, so it's longer than a regular marathon, but trails are like that sometimes. But it starts out, and at the end of every wave, there's a guy with a broom.
Yeah.
He's the sweeper. And he's running at a 7-hour pace, and you finish ahead of him, or you don't get an official finish.
Right.
And, well, you know, I'm on marathon number 6 out of 7 right now. So I really don't think I have much of an option, so I'm kind of, you know, a little bit nervous, you know.
Yeah,
so we take off downhill.
You got the Grim Reaper. Yeah,
the Grim Sweeper right behind us. So, you know, we take off downhill, and it's the first, 20 minutes or so, there's no passing anybody. I mean, it's downhill, it's rocks, it's kind of slippery, a little bit wet. And, you know, we just go downhill for a while. And suddenly it levels out, and we can actually go out. You know, we went and jumped over a few fences. They had stiles there and everything so people could get over. But then we started way down a long, long, gradual downhill. You know, we'd been told what was coming. There's a nice stream crossing in the middle of this thing. Well, we get down, we go over this little rise, and there's a little stream there. You go through that, and you're, you know, up to your ankles or better. Go across that. You go over this little knoll, and then there's the river. And they've actually got a rope stretched across the river in case you happen to get washed away, you can catch yourself.
Yeah.
Well, that one was over our waist. We waded across that, got through it, got everything. You know, we got to the other side, took our shoes off, dumped the gravel out of them, out of the bottoms of them, and, you know, put it back on, and then we started on the first of two enormous slogs. I mean, we just went uphill, uphill, uphill for like 30, 40 minutes at a time.
Sure.
And, you know, you walked it because it was too steep to run. So the three of us are working this thing. We're going uphill. And we do go downhill for, maybe 20 minutes or so, and we start the next one. And we're going uphill again for the same kind of thing, you know, for, you know, 30, 40 minutes.
So how'd you end up finishing?
Well, you know, we got to the top of that hill. We had 19K to go. And we went into an aid station, and right behind us into the aid station comes a guy with a broom.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, crap. And I looked at him. I said, man, I hope you're ahead of schedule. And he said, no, I'm actually a couple minutes behind. And I'm thinking, oh, man. So anyway, meanwhile, my buddy Paul sits down to take his shoes off and dump his socks out because he can't run anymore on the shoes he's wearing. So And, he, you know, I'm standing there waiting for Paul to get his stuff back together, and meanwhile, the guy with the broom takes off without me. And I'm looking at Paul and looking at him, and, you know, he looks at my face. He says, just go. And so I took off. I chased down the sweeper, beat him to the next aid station. You know, I was leaving as he was coming in, but he was right behind me, and I could hear him, and I could, you know, it's like he's warning everybody as he catches up with him. He says, you know, you got to beat me, man. You're going to be out of this thing. And, you know, he's just, and he's annoying the shit out of me. And I'm like, man, I got to get away from this guy. So I took off a little bit faster, and I was catching people, and I was running, you know, still up and downhill quite a bit, but nothing too serious that I couldn't just keep running it. I caught up with my other buddy, Brent. He was still out there. You know, we just kept working it until we got to, you know, 3K to go. And then we started this serious, serious downhill. But, you know, in the process of those hills, I'm thinking, you know, I'm hearing my dad, you know, where he says, do you really think you could do this?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, damn it. You know, this one's for you, Dad. You know, I just put it down. I just, you know, Dad motivated me right there. He pissed me off enough to get me going. And you know, it was exactly what I needed right then was his words echoing in my head. You know, I took off. I got to that last downhill, and, you know, by that time, we've got a whole marathon in. It's, you know, 42K. I got 3K to go. Yep. And I'm still got a ways to go, but I can't hear the guy behind me anymore. And so I'm just working this downhill and, you know, trying to shorten my stride up and keep my feet going as fast as I can. And, you know, I'm still a little nervous. And finally, you know, my buddy gets ahead of me a little bit. And we get to the little paved with railing, which means we're almost back to the finish line. And I hear him announce his name down at the bottom, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to make it. And I get down to the bottom. 6 hours, 45 minutes. The most satisfying marathon finish I ever had.
Right.
And
you had to really work. Right.
Oh, man. I worked so hard. I felt so good. And, you know, we sat there just waiting for Paul, you know, because, I mean, the sweeper was ahead of him last time we saw him. He came in about 6 hours and 52 minutes or something. So he beat the sweeper as well. We all had a really successful day.
All right. So you got one left.
I got one left, yeah. And but that wasn't until the next weekend. It ended up being the 18th of March in 2007. It was in Seoul, South Korea. But meanwhile, before we went to Seoul, we went down and we climbed Mount Kosciuszko, which is the highest point in Australia. I hung out with a guy that we had met on a trip to the North Pole a couple years back. Then we went to Seoul. We basically, this one was one of those almost anticlimactic things because we got there, you know, the city's easy to get around in once you get you can't read the signs, but if you can read a subway map, you can get wherever you want to go. We found out where we were going. We had a good time. We ate on St. Patrick's Day in an Irish pub with eight other people total in the whole place. Not your typical St. Patrick's Day in an Irish pub, but nonetheless, it was the night before the final marathon, and we got out there the next morning, and it was the most gorgeous day we've ever seen. Perfect temperature, sunshine, totally flat course. We ran together. I mean, the three of us just ran together the whole time, having a good time, and you know, the kids there are so amazing because they just love to have attention from foreigners because they're all trying to learn English. And so they'd come up to you, and they'd use, like, the 10 English words they knew just to practice, and then they'd walk away giggling, you know. And if you'd run by and high-five them, they'd just be giggling like crazy, and they just loved it. But,
you know. Did you end up breaking the record or anything?
Well, I thought I did. I got my 35 days in. I did exactly what I intended to do. Finished that one in the Olympic Stadium in Seoul. Figured that I had just set the world record. Well, but I didn't. I waited till I got home. I had maybe a suspicion there was a guy that I met. I actually met him on the Antarctica trip. But when I got home, I have a good picture of him in Luxor in the marathon.
Yeah.
And he had done Luxor and Valencia, but the only thing is he had done two the previous weekend because he did Asia in one day and North America the next day, taking advantage of the international dateline. So he actually finished in just a hair under 30 days, where I finished in just a hair under 35 days.
Yeah, and I think the current record is like 9 days.
No. That's the current record is still his.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, for running organized marathons on seven continents is the record we're talking about. The record for actually running a marathon distance on seven continents is just around 5 days, and that was set by Richard Donovan earlier this year, who's another good friend of mine.
So Don, I'm running out of time with you here. You've been too eloquent for me. Give me a couple of closing words here. Like, what's the future hold for you, and what do you recommend for people who are thinking about making their lives more adventurous?
Well, the thing I recommend is sit down and make a list. You know, I keep 100 things on a list all the time, at a minimum of 100 things that I'm going to do. And usually when I go on a trip, the list grows. And because somebody else will be talking to us, like, man, I should go do that. And next thing you know, we've got lots more adventures dreamed up. But, you need to make a list to start with, and then it's just these little action items. You know, find something on your list and just call the company that's doing it and sign up for it. You know, whatever it takes, and, you know, put it out a little ways so you got some time to think about it and got some time for your brain to handle it, because your brain will handle it. Anything you want to do, you know, if you turn the problem over to yourself, you know, it'll sit there and it'll ferment, and next thing you know, you planted a seed and it's going to start growing. Everybody should do that. Everybody should have a list of things they want to accomplish, because it's just, you know, it's made a tremendous difference in my life. And as far as the future goes, you know, I'm going to finish the 50 states again. I still have designs on the world record for the 7 continents. I did it in 35 days in 2007. And I did the other Antarctica marathon in 2007 as well, and did it in 33 days because we got delayed by 8 days going into Antarctica because of snowstorms.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have first place, but I have second and third. And I am still the only guy who's run 7 continents twice in 1 year.
Tell us what your website address is and how people find you.
It's cooladventures.net.
Okay.
And also you can find me at GrandRapidsMarathon.com. That's my big event. You know, I organized the Grand Rapids Marathon. I started that event, you know, 6 years ago. We are growing every year. We should be around probably 3,600 people this year. And things are going real well here. But I always interact with people when they email me or ask me questions or whatever. I'm happy to talk to them, give them any feedback or any advice or whatever they like. So cooladventures.net, great place to be.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go.
Okay. Well, thanks for getting a hold of me, and give me a call anytime.
Yeah, and I love the picture of Machu Picchu here on your website. That's really cool.
Yeah, isn't that nice? So scroll down a little bit. You can see me at the South Pole, too. So.
Yeah, I see that. And you're naked.
Yeah. It was hard. It was frozen. Yeah. So anyway, well, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, keep it up. Stay in touch.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You got to tell them Silent Breed is people!
Okay, folks, that's it. And this is going to be a long one because Don is a talker, huh? He'd be great to run with, especially if you need a distraction, right? So he could fill up a marathon. By the way, welcome to episode 82 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. Love you guys and gals in a healthy, non-threatening, non-creepy way. Had a great week. Seemed to have kicked this flu and managed to lose 12 pounds somehow. So maybe you guys found it. Feel strong over the shorter distances, and you know, I have some annoying aches and pains, but I'll work those out. So we're looking for volunteers for our Ragnar Relay, New England, from Connecticut to Boston. You can help our Twitter team or on an ultra team. You can help us by standing at an aid station in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night, sometime on the weekend of September 12th. You know, we can't pay you, but you'll become instantly famous because we're all uber social networkers. So if you have a cause, a charity, or a business, you know, it might be good exposure for you. Plus, it's going to be a freaking riot. Also, if someone wants to tag along and run the video cameras to make a rockumentary for us, I'm sure we could set it up. It's going to rock hard, man. We're going to have some fun. So I have been running in my new Brooks Glycerin 7s, and they're nice, fast, comfy shoes. I definitely give them the seal of approval for comfort and ride for any other bulky, high-mileage, neutral runners out there. So add Brooks_running to your Twitter list, too. You can interact with them over there. And after riding with Anthony this last weekend, I'm starting to fall in love with a new idea I have. And this new idea is the idea of riding my own self-supported 100-mile trail bike ultra over the next couple of weeks or months. I'm going to call it the Mad Dog Express 100. So shoot me a note if you're interested in riding along. I don't want to waste my training.
I was going to do a 3-a-day today, get up and run before work, run at lunch, and run after, but I couldn't drag my lazy ass out of bed, so it's only going to be a 2. But I'll take Buddy, the smartest dog in the world, out with me tonight on a headlamp run. He'll like that. And now that I know he's the smartest dog in the world, he's going to have to take up, you know, some slack. He's going to take some more responsibility. He's going to have to step it up. You know, maybe he can plan the routes or create some training plans for me or something. We'll have to work something out. I'll leave you with some tips. First of all, you really have to listen to your body and adjust to every run, especially when you're ramping up again like I am. You're going to find situations where something hurts, like an Achilles or a calf or a quad, and you're going to start to struggle. What you got to do is you can't fight it. Focus on relaxing, focus on your form, straighten up, loosen your hands and your arms and your shoulders and your chin, take nice deep breaths, and focus those breaths on the area that hurts. Now, if you're really struggling, stop and gather yourself. Take a drink, stretch a little, maybe a little self-massage of the affected area. You're going to benefit more from training with a relaxed pace and good form than toughing it out and going ugly for the rest of your run. And when you get close to the end, especially in those long runs, you guys are in marathon programs doing those long runs, maybe running longer than you ever have before, you know, pick up a little pace towards the end. Pick it up a little bit. Relax. Lengthen out your stride. I know you're going to be tired, but just work this with your mind and not your body. Relax, lengthen out your stride, and visualize. Visualize yourself flying down a beautiful valley, or picture yourself riding smoothly and effortlessly on a magic carpet. And don't forget to smile. Force a smile on your face. And I know it sounds goofy, but it takes practice, but you can use your mind to control your body, and you can get, if you finish strong, that's going to emotionally and physically benefit you way better than toughing it out. The music tonight is a nice number by a group called Brad Sucks from the PodSafe Music Network, and is called Sick as a Dog. And the previous little snippet there was also from the PodSafe Music Network and was I'm Getting Sick by Chachi on Acid. Seriously, folks, I can't make this stuff up. And I hope you'll avoid the flu and stay well enough to see me out there. Ciao.
Taken out and beaten down and covered up and down with cement. Saying hello on the down low. Religions and guns and ammo. In my mind, I made my mind up. I don't mean to take your time up. In my heart, I know the real trick. Baby, I know that you make me sick.
Sick, sick,
sick as a dog.
Sick as a dog.
Thanks for listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.